Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
We're talking about launching large. We think it's the best way to start a church. There's lots of different ways, and we're going to explain why. We're going to kind of argue for why to launch large, and there's many reasons for that. Here's an incredible reason right here. That is Mark. Why don't you tell him about that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, even the story behind that, like, I never was a part of a large church. I've been always a part of churches about 100 to 150 people. I got saved in college. Largest church I'd ever been a part of was our mother church, about 400 people. And then we were in the process of planting this church. And the story behind this is the fact that when I met with you for coaching one time, Dave, you had talked about how you had grown churches into the thousands. And I think most important for me was the fact that, like, you were talking about all the number of people who accepted Christ, that you had had these baptisms where 20, 30, 40, 50 people were being baptized. I had maybe, in all the ministries that I'd been a part of, only seen maybe a handful of people ever come to Christ. And so I was so hungry for something like that, that when you told me about that, it was so inspiring. This was our first big baptism, where I think in the second year of our church, where we had 53 people baptized. And so for
awesome.
The vision that Dave had cast to me, for that to come to fruition, like, this was like this was it. This is why I got into it in the first place.
That's awesome. 53 people, little inflatable pool at the high school that they were meeting at. We would see that, and you know, it blows your mind. But that's one thing that we hope you'll be able to do, is expand your thinking in terms of what God could do, in terms of how big a God He is, in terms of what He can do. To see 50, 60, 70, 80 people baptized in one setting, you can't do it all. You've got to involve other people,
yeah.
Share the joy in the process. So here's the old paradigm. This is a major paradigm shift that we're looking at here. That this isn't working, but I'll share with you what the major paradigm shift. Mark, see if you can get that going.
Sure.
The old school was you would plant. It was kind of the farming illustration. You'd plant a seed, you'd watch it grow, but it was a very slow growth in the process. The new metaphor is launching a church, and it's like this rocket ship that just kind of goes off. And we have another one, but here I would argue again that the early church launched large. A lot of people don't talk about that, but think about it. Jesus gathered his core group, his 12 disciples, and then he grew that, and then he had 72, and he sent them out two by two. He said, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few, so pray to the Lord of the harvest. So know that while you're planting the church and God's called you, there's other people that he's calling around you to be part of it. And then those 72, and then the 120 became part of the larger core group up in the upper room praying for God to move. Holy Spirit descended. Peter went out and preached. 3,000 people were saved. That was the beginning. That's our model in terms of how the church was started and expanded out of there. If you could hit the next one there, Mark. So we look at church planting versus church launching. And we would say that we think it's the most effective in terms of reaching people for Christ, both in the short run and the long run. Short run because you're actually launching large with as many people as possible, and in the large run because you can continue to grow. We found it, I started with this if you just came in, but if you start small, there's a really good chance you're going to stay small. If you can launch large, and we'll talk about what large is in context, you can keep growing. Mark launched, my experience was I got to plant three churches by God's grace. Kind of crazy, I know. We thought we'd be at one and stay there for 30 years like Rick Warren, you know, kind of thing. And after 8 years, God was doing a great thing, and some friends called in Northern California. We started our first in Southern California. We moved up there, started again, saw God do great things. We were there for 10 years, came back down, started a third one, and then I started coaching people full-time in ministry and in launching churches. But we found that you can break through these growth barriers much faster as a result. So if you look at this, we actually have a picture here It's kind of freezing sometimes. There it is, Mark. It might have, maybe helps if I knew what I was doing. When you look at that, tell me the first gut reaction. Don't think. Just what is the first reaction when you see that?
Whoa.
Whoa. Power. What else? Energy.
Explosion.
A lot of gas.
Pioneer.
So this is the visual for the launching large. And I want you to think of it like this. It takes a lot of energy, doesn't it, to get that rocket ship off the ground. It takes a lot of hard work, doesn't it, Mark?
Yeah.
A lot of hard work, but you load that at the front end, and the results as a result of that are tremendous. And what happens with the rocket is it breaks through the atmosphere, and then the boosters go, and then it breaks out of that atmosphere and kind of just takes off. And that's what a large launch church can do. One of the barriers, in fact, in my mind, it's the barrier. The barrier is the 200 barrier. Now, some will talk about 50, 65, 100, 150, but the real one is the 200 barrier. Most churches never get beyond the 200 barrier. Like 90% of churches never get beyond that. The best way to get beyond that is quickly. The best way to do it is to launch and to break through that quickly. And then you can do what Mark's church is doing. Tell them, how old is your church now, Mark?
6 years old. We just celebrated our sixth anniversary.
Sixth anniversary. How many on average? I know you just had Easter.
Anywhere between 12 to 1,300.
12 to 1,300 people. And there's no limit to what they could grow except for the size of the community where they're at. But they can just continue to grow because they broke through that really, really quickly.
And even just to add one thing to what Dave is saying, like, yes, I think there are some theological implications for what we're talking about. But for me, it was really more of a practical reasoning. Here, the whole picture is like, the whole reason why you need all of these resources and all of this energy is so that that little ship can break through the atmosphere, because it's that difficult to do that. For us, not only did we want to break through the 250 barrier, for us, we were like, if that's going to be the most difficult barrier to break, this is our goal at least, and who knows what God's plan is, but our goal is to see if we can break that from day one and never look back. Now, in our area, we're, if you want to call it this, a small town in Southern California. If you could call it that.
It is.
And so no church had ever done well in our area. We had a mother church that was giving up two of what he called, I don't agree with him, but what he called his best staff members in order to go and do this. So, like, we had a ton, like, riding on the line. My senior pastor had a ton riding on the line by standing up and saying, hey, guys, I know that when I retire, you think that these two are going to take over, but in fact, we're going to do something else. We're going to send them away. So I wanted to make sure and defend the honor of the person who was standing up to do this. Now, I felt like God was leading us to do that as well. But at the same time, like, we, for us, like, it was a pragmatic reason for us to just go, okay, how can we take the kingdom by storm? How can we go out and give this baby the largest birth weight? For us, it wasn't about building a monument to ourselves. It was about, how can we give this baby the best chance for survival that we can give it?
Can I tell him the story? I don't want to embarrass you,
yeah,
but just tell him the story. When I first met Mark, he came to a boot camp that I taught at Talbot Seminary, part of Biola University. And Mark had come there at the recommendation of a friend, and we went out to lunch when the day he came. And so I said, tell me about your church, Mark. He said, well, I have these 30 or 40 people that are part of our core group from the mother church you just described.
Nobody from the area.
They're all moving to this other area. And I said, how many would you like to start with? And he told me, he said, how many do you think you'll start with? And he said, about 150. All right, right? Is that right about that?
I think we wanted to start with 200, 250.
Yeah. And but he only had these 30 or so people,
and
right?
That's a big jump.
Yeah, it was a big jump. So I said, well, how are you going to do that? And he said, well, I don't know. I think, you know, each one will invite somebody, and they'll invite some other people, and we'll just have that many people. And, you know, I'm an encourager, but I wanted to be honest with him. You know what I mean? My wife. I wanted to be honest with him. I try, but I'm also brutally honest. And so I said, you're not going to have that many people at your grand opening with what you're doing. I said, but you could. And Mark, I mean, he was a learner, and we met. He would drive out at 5 a.m. and fight traffic, you know, and actually beat the traffic, come out. We'd spend the morning together once a week. And we developed this plan that we're going to teach you that's launching large, and they, for sure, they did that. So go ahead and do the next one. So here's what I want you to see just with this. We're going to go through this one quickly, but Jesus, when you look at what he did, he had both. So it's not a matter of either or, you know, small group, large group, dynamics. It's both and. Jesus would speak to the masses. Jesus would speak with his core and his team. And then you see it here. It was early in the early church with Paul. It was both and. They were in the temple and homes. They were going house to house. They were in the public house to house. And so here we have two gathering models that we're going to look at. So the first one is a core to crowd. And this is how a lot of churches start. They start with a really small group, and they stay in a small group for a long time. My tradition, I'm with the Evangelical Free Church of America. I'm a church plant director on the West Coast. Before that, I was in Southern Baptist. Started three Saddleback daughter churches under Rick Warren. And this was just the opposite, but this is what a lot of people do, is they start with the core and try and grow the crowd. In Southern Baptist churches, they would call it a mission church. And you hadn't even graduated to become a full-fledged church until about 5 years into it. We had the philosophy, no, we're going to start as a full-fledged church from the very beginning and grow from there. So the model that we gravitated toward and implemented was this crowd to core. We're going to talk about these monthly preview services. We call them sneak preview services. And so what it is, it's gathering a large group of people through a number of services and a number of means in order then to turn the crowd into a church. It's not a church when you first start. It's just a lot of people and it's a crowd. But the good news is you can turn that crowd into a church. Here's some benchmarks. Mark, why don't you go over those?
The benchmarks are typically planners gather the first 40 for prospecting, networking, and bridging. They gather the second wave with sneak previews and marketing, the third wave with their grand opening. So the first one is kind of more of your launch team, right?
Yes.
Dave, you want to talk about the launch team?
Yeah, this is your launch team. Some people call it a core group. It's the same kind of thing. But these are your initial people. And each time I did this, we started with a Bible study. That's how we started. People ask me, how do you start a church? We started with an initial Bible study for Christians primarily. People say, oh, it'd be great to start a church with all unchurched non-Christians. I don't know anybody's ever done that. It sounds like a great idea. But we looked for people who were all in, people who love Jesus, people who, when we said, let's charge that hill, they got excited and they wanted to go with us. They were catalytic. They were pioneer type people. So we looked at this. Now, this is actually from a book called Fast Growing Churches, and his perspective is 40. I think you can large, we've done it three times, with 25 to 50 in your core group, or more, obviously, but to have at least 25. He found that 40, he kind of settled on 40 is a great number, but we saw that 25 we could do it with, and then you move into the second phase.
And can I piggyback off of what you just
Absolutely.
Said? Dave said two words that are so key, and that is catalytic and entrepreneurial. Actually, I don't know if
I didn't
you said
say
entrepreneurial
but I meant it.
For me, I'm going to take that theme, but I'm going to put a different spin to it. We didn't do Bible study. We didn't have a worship time. We said, hey, guys, we are a team of people that are going to launch this church with this many people on this date, and here's a strategy on how we're going to get there. So everything that we ever did was not what we wanted to do was we wanted to get our core group away from this idea that we're here to serve you and that we're here to serve your children and this can be a safe place for you. No, what we wanted to do is we wanted to say all of us are on mission. We're all going to roll up our sleeves. We're all going to give and we're all going to die for this cause that's going to happen in a couple months. So it's so important, especially because we came from another mother church. It was so important for us to deprogram our people from what the mother church was to reprogram to who We were going to be, now you might be thinking, well, you know, I don't have the luxury of gathering 25 people from a mother church. Yeah, but the people who are a part of your launch team, most probably the majority of them have some type of church experience. And what you want to do is you want to gather people who really just are so interested in this entrepreneurial kick butt, we're going to kick in the gates of hell type people. Those are the people that you want to gather. I don't know if they're that way, but you can't be apologetic about why it is that you're forming this group.
Yes, and this is the hardest part. These three circles, the red is the hardest zone. That's where you're building your launch team. That's where you're out recruiting. Unlike Mark, the three churches I did, we never had a mother church that was in our area that gave us people. So we started from scratch. The first time was a parachute drop. I don't recommend it.
How did you gather people?
We gathered people. The first time we gathered people, I knocked on doors, old school. You know, starting a church, wonder why you don't go to church. I looked for people who didn't. But I found that didn't gather anybody. It told me a lot about them. I learned about psychographics and demographics from that. But the way we did it is we went on the radio. Because I was looking for Christians, and there was one Christian radio station in the city that I lived in. And they had 60% that were churched and 40% that were unchurched that listened to us. Very interesting. So I just went on. We made a really nice radio commercial. A friend of mine, studio musician, I talked on it and said, hey, this is Dave Page. I'm starting a brand new church. This is the kind of church it's going to be. And went on. It's just a minute commercial. If you'd like to be part of a church like that, we gave them the contact information. We had a Friday night Bible study. And 12 people showed up. And they were all Christians. Every one of them stayed. We grew that core group from there. Second time, I had a couple in the area that invited us to come up to Auburn, California. It's in a suburb of Sacramento. And they said, I was already pastoring a church, but we had prayed, felt God was leading us there. They said, what do? We want to get going. I wasn't even up there. And I said, well, start a Bible study. And when you get it up to 20, I'll fly up and meet with the core. And it took about 2 months, and they called me. They had 22. I flew up. They met. They did a hotel room about the size of this room. I walked in the room after preaching down at my church in Southern California, flew up. There were 40 people in the room. And that became our core group and grew that to 70
people.
I'm
going to make one quick comment. You know, this whole thing about gathering a launch team is difficult, but I just heard Andy Wood's story from South Bay.
Yeah, I know Andy.
You know, 5 years, they're running, I think, like 1,600 people or something.
Doing very
well. And I think their story, if I have it right, went something along the lines of they moved into an apartment complex and they had different people on their team that was moving with them. I think only like 8 families or something like that. I think they all moved into an apartment complex. They had block parties for this apartment complex like periodically. They were constantly gathering people, people, putting on these block parties just to get maximum exposure to whoever they could, and that's how they started with their core group.
Which is a great way. There's actually a ministry called Apartment Life. Some of you probably have heard of it, and they specialize with church planning. They'll give you free or reduced rent, and you kind of become the PR director in the actual apartment, and it's kind of a neat ministry.
But I think you guys get this. That group is not, those are not spectators. That is your army.
Second group was the people, that's people you gather in the previews. The third group, the 120 and above, are people from the grand opening and from the launch. Again, from Stephen Gray's book, Struggling Church Plants Are One-Dimensional, Only One Worship Service, Fast-Growing or Multidimensional Worship and Small Groups. We've even seen some of our churches actually launch with two services. Now, I never did that. The second church I started, we launched at Easter, and that fall we went to two services. But some of them actually do that. So here you have this early church core group of 120, and then the launching with 3,000 people, and then gathering into core groups. No, that church actually did that.
Wow.
They had more than that, but they did that. A pretty amazing church. It's a church in Jacksonville. If you want to go to a good conference, go to one on Thursday morning with Joby Martin. He's from Church at 1122. I've been coaching him. They've grown. It's been unbelievable. They started with a large core group out of a church, but they've grown like 4,000 people in the last year. It's been unbelievable. And many of them conversion growth. So you see again, Jesus meeting with the large groups. Secret of large groups, how did Jesus attract crowds? And I would say he loved people. He loved especially unbelievers. They met people's needs. Tell them the question real quick, Mark, what you guys started your church asking from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, a question that we started asking was, you know, can a small group of people doing simple acts of kindness really change its community? And so the book that really affected me and the guy that I planted the church with is Church of Irresistible Influence. And the question that they asked was, if your church in the community ever closed its doors, would the community ever even notice? And I, like I said, I've always been a part of super small churches, and every church experience that I ever had, I think I could honestly say no. Like, would the community, would the city at large notice if our church closed its doors? I don't think so. So we went out to really just start asking the city and the mayor, government officials, how can we be a positive impact to the city? We've been putting things on like Easter egg hunts for the entire city to come to. So yeah, I mean, when our church was only, we started with 200. So like when our church was only 200 people, I mean, we were still putting on Easter egg hunts for, you know, 5,000 people would come to. And it was kind of nice having, you know, the church used to be the center of community life back in the day. And so our vision was like, how can we as the church be instrumental in like bringing people back together?
And that's what's really exciting with a lot of the church planners I get to work with that I see planning churches. They're using technology, they're using social media, they're using direct mail to reach out to people, but they're combining that with a real compassion evangelism, a servant evangelism. We're here to serve the city. We're here to love the city. Mutual friend of ours, Tim Jacobs, I was just with him last week in Phoenix. Tim's membership class, he just gets up and tells them, hey, I love Goodyear, Arizona. That's where he's at. Mm. He said, either love Goodyear or leave Goodyear, because our church is here to love the city and to meet needs within our city.
Great.
So how did Jesus do it? He met needs. He loved people. How do planners today launch large? Through loving unbelievers and people, through meeting people's needs, and through practical Bible teaching as a result.
Yeah, I mean, we would like pass out water on the street corners. I mean, we would mow people's lawns for them in the beginning. We would take down and put up Christmas lights for people. We partnered with a dental office in the area that just so happened to be a Christian. So we provided like, I think 50, every dental project that we end up doing is $50,000 worth of dental services.
Wow.
For free on them. And we don't even have to pay a dime. We're just their advertising mechanism for this pro bono day. I mean, there's so many things that you can do to...
My favorite one, the Starbucks one.
Oh, yeah, and we do this thing. This isn't really an event, but what we tell our people to do is we have this little card that says, that we hand out to our people, something along the lines of, like, this one is on us. And so what we do is we encourage our people to go through Starbucks, to go to the cashier and say, hey, can I pay for the person behind me, and can you give them this card? And so on the front it says, yeah, something like this one's on us. On the back it says, you know, we're just doing this because we want to show you a simple act of God's kindness or something like that. It still has our church name and website and service information on it. That's about it. But we do put our church name on it. And there was one time we have somebody, a very good person in our church, their daughter had worked at Starbucks during that time. And she said that one card set off a chain reaction of 40 different cars, like paying for the person behind them, and then them paying for the person behind them, and them paying for the person behind them. So that
very
was pretty cool.
So now when I go to Eastvale, I look for window stickers. Vantage Point Church, going to Starbucks, follow them in, and we're good to go. Here's the issue, and this is very interesting, and you would think this would come from some mega church study. It's not. This is actually information from Larry Osborne and Sticky Teams that are so pro small group. Very few people come to Christ through a small group. Approximately 25%, where 75% of salvation is happening within the worship services. So most conversions start with a conversation with a friend, followed by a visit to church. Mm. Very, very interesting. So you come down to it. What is large? Well, it's going to look different wherever you go. It's going to depend on the city that you're in, the context, and the culture that you find yourself in. Normally, we look at large as starting with 100 or 200 or 300 or more people at your grand opening. And I'll give you an example. Like, there's a city called Lone Pine, California. Anybody ever heard of Lone Pine, California? Nobody from California.
I
Even if you were from California,
I've never heard
you've
of
never
Lone
heard
Pine.
Of it. Bishop, how about Bishop? It's right by Bishop. Anyway, it's a drive-through, you miss it kind of city. And the population is like 3,000. Well, what would be large in Lone Pine? 10%, that would be huge.
That would be huge.
10%. 1% would be big in some communities. Yeah. But probably 50, 30, 50, 75, whatever. I have a friend, Dave Miller. Dave actually was a mega church pastor who became a church planner. He said he likened to playing football. The mega church was football. Church planning was rugby. Much tougher. And I like that analogy. But Dave started in a city called Exeter, which is a city about 3,000 to 4,000 people. Actually, it was a city of about 8,000 to 9,000 people, Exeter. And he thought, boy, if we could start with 100, that would be big. The largest church in Exeter is the Assembly of God. It's 400 people, and it's 40 years old. And so, but I said, Dave, I knew Dave, and he had a great core group. I said, I think you could start with 150, maybe even 200, Dave. Oh, no, I don't think we can. But if we could start with 100, that'd be awesome. I said, it would, but let's see what we can do. Well, they did previews, and they had up to over 100 at some of their previews. And when they launched a few months later, they actually went over 200 in Exeter, California. But it just really depends on where you're at and what the community is like. So why is it so important to launch as large as possible? Well, here's the dilemma. The dilemma is a critical mass issue. You want to be able to reach critical mass. If you just started without a preview service, and let's say you gathered people and you had, let's say you had 100, but depending on what kind of means of advertising you did and marketing, word of mouth, whatever, then maybe you get back 50 or 60 people. Now you're below critical mass. Maybe then it goes down to in the 40 to 50. Well, 40 to 50 in a living room with, you know, a Bible study, that's electric, right? That's exciting. But put 40 or 50 people in a theater, in a high school, in a junior high, community room, whatever, it's just not. So critical mass, we found, is about 75 people. So what if you could do 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 or more previews and gather and get bigger and bigger?
Can I just say something about that? Perception is so powerful. My wife
people
and I are
in.
Foodies, and we love restaurants. And the question that we've always asked ourselves is it the crowd that makes the food good, or is it the food that makes the crowd? It's both, right? We don't like going into a restaurant where there are no people around because you have this idea of, does not anybody else like this thing? Part of the reason why we go on Yelp is because we want to see if the masses like it. The masses of, but when we go to a foreign city and we see a line outside of a restaurant, no matter what, where we want to go to that restaurant because people affect our perception of the quality of what it is that's going to happen. No matter how good you preach, if there are two people in the seats, then somebody's going to hear you and go, this sucks, you know? But if you're just even a media, you know, I think you know where I'm going with this. People affect perception. That's why
Definitely. It's
so important to have that critical mass.
And they'll just come in and say, oh, this must not be happening. You know, there's just not many people here. Yelp's a fascinating thing, isn't it? Now churches are on Yelp, and then people write things about churches. I'm fascinated
to
read that.
And because of that very idea, you also have to watch the first room that you get into.
Yes.
Because, I mean, if you think, hallelujah, we have a huge vision for what God is doing, and then you rent out this 1,000-seat auditorium, and you have 300 people that come, praise the Lord, you're still going to feel like a failure at the end of the day.
The size is important, but the natural instinct is to want to begin worship services right away. You do these previews. I was at Mark's first one. Everybody, they spontaneously clapped at the end of this thing. They were so excited. And they're like, oh no, we got to wait another month till the next service. But that's your job as the leader. They don't understand why you have to do that, but you're gathering as many people as you can. And your job is to keep them motivated during those months in between leading up to the grand opening. And here's the deal is, you really don't have a enough children's workers, people in the parking lot, people handing out bulletins, people in the band. You don't have enough when you start, but that's the beauty of the preview monthly services. It buys you time to gather those people, some of which will come out of the preview services themselves. Here's the problem is the premature launch. Pathetic picture of the little baby. The poor baby's hooked up to all these tubes. But that's what happens a lot of times with churches. Graphic picture. It's a boy. Not health.
Thank you, Dave.
Not health, growth, future dreams, but it's survival. And I don't know where you're from, but where we're from in Southern California, in our Evangelical Free Church of America district, if a church is 100 or below, we say it's an at-risk church. Why is it at risk? Because they could go under any time. Churches are just like businesses. They stop when there's no cash flow, and that can happen. And so to be able to get beyond where it's just, are we going to survive? Are we going to survive the life of the church? Are we going to survive? Versus how are we going to thrive? It's a whole different mentality.
Because if you're at 100 people and then you go through your first summer,
the first summer's the hardest. You got to just kind of hang in there.
Yeah.
But again, you launch small, you stay small. Critical mass importance. Here's a survey that was done of healthy churches. Another thing to do in terms of when you get a second staff person becomes a real key. Most churches, again, just have one solo pastor. So to be able to have another pastor, another staff person, many churches we see from the beginning, they may start as volunteer, they raise their own funds, and they move into that. But here's the differences you'll see. But here's the public launch, 100 or over. The fast-growing healthy churches, 75% started with that. 20% of the struggling churches did. So that became a huge determining factor. You can see the other things on there. You'll get the PowerPoint if you do the email.
That
some elders at the beginning, they must have had people they already knew from other churches.
Yeah.
But here's the solution. This is one of the greatest inventions in church planning in the last two decades. It's called preview services. They're monthly services. This is actually one of our EV Free churches in El Dorado Hills up by Sacramento. Just started last month. It's called Vintage Grace Church.
Is that their grand opening?
And that's their grand opening of their service. We have some previews,
too. Do you know
we
support them? I mean,
I didn't know
like
that.
A great guy. Yeah.
Drew is a great guy. Drew's a great guy. Drew Sodstrom, we'll see Drew in just a minute, but there's what it looked like. This next one is actually, I think it froze, Mark. This next one is actually a preview service itself. This was one that I got to be a part of in Thousand Oaks. Matt Larson, who you're going to see. Here's some advantages. This was their first preview service in a theater. It was an unbelievable service. It's lower cost. You get to kind of test out the preaching all as a result of that. First impressions are huge, to be able to make a first impression, and then to cover the bases and to be able, some guys will forget, where's that card? These cards are golden. To have some kind of connection card, welcome card that people can fill out, that you can get their email contact information to be able to follow up, because you're not going to have another service for a month with the preview services, and you want to invite them to that comeback service. The time is running. The clock is ticking. And there's this balance. It's like this tightrope. You want urgency because you don't want to say, well, we're on the field. We're not going to start for a year. You know, we're just going to embed ourselves in the community for a year. You know, no, you need, you know, urgency gets you out of bed. We have a deadline. We're going to start. We're going to start previews here. We're going to launch at this point, and it gets you going. But then you don't want to wait too long, and you don't want to start too soon. So that's why birth actually is a really good analogy for church planning, because there's that gestation period and there's 9 months and it's too early, there's problems. It's too late, there's problems. They'll take them out. So that's what you're dealing with.
And I just have a quick question because I don't want to assume anything. Is there anybody who doesn't know what a preview service is? Is there anybody? Everybody knows? Perfect.
Monthly services.
Well, could I just say, I mean, essentially, you're just referring to monthly services,
right,
but in the same style and fashion as you intend to keep them.
Yes, and that's really important. It's not a let your hair down, we're just practicing service.
It's not, hey, let's just kind of see what we can get and buy,
yeah,
and then just kind of, well, we'll just refine things things as things go on to our grand opening. You are going to put your best foot forward at that first preview.
It's not try out this singer, see if they're any good. You do that before the preview services. So trust me, we share a lot of stuff, you know, the successes, but we've made a lot of more failures than any successes we've ever had. I'll speak for myself. Dave, but some of those things, yeah.
Dave, Mark, in terms of getting people to actually give you those cards back,
yes,
you know, those cards you were speaking of, how successful were you? Because in a lot of situations, people are hesitant to fill out.
That's a good point. We try and give them an incentive to give it back. So we might have a singer, we've brought in guest singers, free iPhone, whatever. We've had singers where they've had CDs and we give away a CD, but in order to get the CD, you got to put this in the thing and then we draw out of that. But you have to, I think it's more not so much giving them something as letting them know what you're not going to do. If you fill this out, you're not going to be visited by somebody on Monday. You're not going, you know, we're letting them know that there's integrity in this, but we would like to follow up with them. So that's kind of how
we usually give an incentive. I'll usually do that during the announcement time so I don't sound too gimmicky, so I'll make the announcement person sound gimmicky. Like, we had Bethany Hamilton, the Soul Surfer, come out to our church one time. We had her autograph a surfboard, and we said, hey, we're going to draw from all the connection cards, and that person's going to win that autographed surfboard. We've never had someone
<That's>
connect. But, yeah, I mean, you can offer other things. But for me, what then I will do after the sermon is I'll say, hey, everybody, I just preached on whatever. You know, I don't know you guys just yet, but I can say that God has put a love in my heart for you. So here's what I'm going to be doing over the course of the next month. I want to pray for each and every one of you by name. So would you be willing to put your prayer request down on the connection card? And I would love to do that. That's my primary motivation. It's not bait and switch, because as a pastor, if you don't start with that kind of heart, like, you shouldn't be in this business. But at the same time, there is this, okay, well, how do we make it so that we can follow up as well? Because I think that's not just marketing, that's care.
And I did that too, and would pray to where it got, you know, so big that I would say, we have a prayer team who will pray for the needs. But I knew going into it that every need, every time people filled that out, they would get prayed for, because we had a wonderful prayer team. And so that's one thing, you can use it as a ministry tool as well. I want to just show you some stories. We're going to go through these very quickly and get to our whole W and launching part of it, how to do it. This is Matt Larson. He's in Thousand Oaks. You can see what he had at his first preview and at his launch as well. They were only 2 years old, 2.5 years old. They launched another church. Out of that was his associate, Kevin. They started with 157, one city over in Camarillo. We go from there to our friend right here, Mark. Mark's first preview had 219. Do you remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
And then they launched with 353. We did something special with Mark's, is actually launched before Easter, because we thought if we could network those new people from the launch in February for the upcoming Easter. And so then they were able to pop over 400 for their first Easter, which was amazing in what they did there. This is the guy Mark mentioned, Drew, the one in El Dorado Hills, who just... They had 157 at their first preview, which ended up being their largest preview. They had four previews, and I thought they would break 200, but they were able to break 300, which was pretty amazing. Drew did a great thing. One thing Drew did, and I've encouraged guys to do this. I did this myself. He would fly up to Sacramento months before and strategically start meeting with people, meeting new people in the area, hanging out at Starbucks. Meeting existing pastors, dialoguing with them, and he did that, building his launch team before he ever moved onto the field, and then a few months on the field, and then into his first preview service. Ryan Kwan, who's also teaching here at the conference, started in Fremont, which is outside the Bay Area. They had a very large core group from a mother church, very large core group, almost 100 people. I think they had 80 people all together. And they were able to launch with a very large group. Some people say, oh, this is just for this culture or suburbia. Or what? No, no. This is Pablo Cachon. He's in Indio. It's 70% Hispanic. I said, Pablo, would you like to do this? He said, absolutely. Let's do it. And Pablo, they did festivals with their previews. They did music, Mexican food, my favorite food. And so Pablo did this. They had like 110 and then 95 at a preview and then 120. And then they launched with 240. A third church, all out of Anthem, is Andy Rogers in San Diego, recently started with 205 people. Youngest guy we started with. Andy was 26 years old when he started. It's about 2 years old now. Here's some reasons why to launch large. We already shared those with you. I want to get down to, if you email me, I'll send you this, but I want to get down to the actual strategy behind it. So we're into gathering a team, and then we're getting down to the actual launch itself. We call it the W, and there's a process here. This is a facility. That was actually your first facility, was
it
not?
Our first facility.
At the intermediate school.
Uh-huh.
It was a clean facility. It was a nice facility, public school. But here's the key. We call it working the W, and this is what it looks like. So here, you have your first preview. You have your time before building your launch team. Then you have your first preview service. The next week is followed by the training of your leadership team, the core group, the launch team, whatever you want to call them. You're training them in leadership. You're training them before that to discover their gifts. You're teaching them everything you know and you've learned about church planning. Then you have, notice 2 weeks after that, you have a comeback event. It could be you rent 8 lanes at the bowling alley for your new people to have fun bowling. You could have them all over to your home. You could do a barbecue at the park. Some way where you're going to get them back. Now, my goal, this is very important, my goal is not to have them here to get them to come to here. My goal is to have them here and then to come to the comeback event where now we can build relationship. And then we want them to come back a month later to the next preview. This is the process. Question?
So the comeback is not designed for the masses, not for the leadership.
Yes, the comeback is designed for the masses, but we have a number of the leaders who come to it. We would always have ringers, you know, one or two couples who would come to this as well. But this is designed for those first-time people who have come to the preview service. This is designed for the regular people who you've started with. And if somebody begs you, you know, was it Daryl? Daryl. And Daryl comes and it's his first time. He says, Dave, man, this is my first time. We love the church. I know we got another service a month from now. Is there anything else in between? Yeah, Daryl, we have the comeback event in 2 weeks. Oh, no, my wife and I, we're coming to that. But is there anything else before that? And he kind of persists, and I'll say, well, yeah, Daryl, we'll invite you. You're welcome to come to this leadership meeting. But that's not my first. It's kind of my default. My first thing to do is to go here. I'm going to invite him to this. And then, of course, everybody gets invited to this.
Yeah.
Anything?
Yeah, I mean, at the leadership training, like the week after, this is what we did. I mean, it was just a time of celebration. You just pulled off the biggest event probably that you've ever pulled off in your entire life. And so you get the team together, you really just celebrate. One of the things that's so important that we don't do enough of in ministry is just to capture stories of how God was working on that given day. And to be able to share those stories. People don't want information as much as they just want inspiration. It's that you can communicate whatever you need to communicate for the second preview, probably in an email, and people are still like, what? You know? The information is probably important, but it's the inspiration. That's the major motivating factor why all those volunteers got in it to begin with.
Yeah.
So don't just go right to business. I know it's easy to kind of do that, but share stories. Have a major part of your meeting devoted to that. And then make sure that everybody breaks up into departments at that point and then talks about like, okay, now for the second one, how do we do this one a little bit better? Regarding the comeback event, like I don't know what your experience is with comeback events. Our comeback events didn't go great. Like we didn't have a ton of people come to them. So don't be like, I may be the norm, I may be the exception, I don't know. Don't be like hugely disappointed if not too many people come back to the comeback. This is meant to be relationship building, but you know what? A lot of times people are just kind of checking you out, and sometimes the idea of getting to know you a little bit better is kind of freaky for them in the beginning. So they want to just kind of preview and watch you from a distance for a little bit. So one of the things that we did towards the end of our W's is we put the comeback just right after the preview service, and we just said, hey, everybody, we're grilling hamburgers outside. So if you want to just hang out with us, get to know us, ask the pastor some questions. Like, you're more than welcome to do that. And that worked out well for us.
And more guys are doing that. There'll be barbecue and tri-tip when you come up to the service. And you're like, wow, I think I'm going to stick around. I'm going to like this church. Stick around. And a lot of them do it right after the service. It's a great way to do it. And this is what Mark said here. You know, the celebration is so important. This part of this is a debriefing meeting. What went right? What was not so good? How can we improve? But also, we always had this thing that we would say preparation, implementation, celebration. So every big event, every preview, it would be that process of doing and always doing some kind of celebrating and thanking
people.
And
for us, you can use this as a training day, but on the week number 4 before your next preview service, we always use that as a huge marketing type day. So whether we had everybody and we did servant evangelism projects, or whether we got everybody and we had a texting party where we had pizza over and everybody just invited people to come to the next service, like that other leadership training day had a huge, like, how do we get people there just to it?
So 3 components to the W. We call it working the W. You got your target group, which is your preview service once a month. You got the leadership community, which your core people are part of, your launch team. And then you got your comeback event, which are for the people who've come. This is what it looks like when you string it out over a few months. Now you're going here, you've got a whole strategy. You're starting with your first month and your first preview service, your second week, third week. You're coming in your second preview, same thing, third, fourth, and then here was the launch Sunday at the fourth one.
How many preview services do you suggest?
I suggest 2 to 4 preview services. The ones they've found a correlation between more preview services, higher attendance when you have the launch. How many did you do?
We did 5, and then we launched on month 6.
They did
so
5.
Imagine stringing that out for 6 months. Like, here's the thing, too, if I could just say this real quickly.
Okay.
Like, even you are probably thinking 4, 5, 6 months. Oh, my gosh, that time frame is so long. Because here's what's going to happen, too. The longer you go, the itchier everybody's going to be. Just like Dave was saying, everybody's going to come back to you on month 1, and it's going to be like, how come we're not doing this next week? And so I almost liken it to this. Like, each and every preview service is almost like a bow and arrow.
You are
putting more and more expectation, more tension on that bow with every one that you pull. Now, you could still snap that bow if you do too many. But what you want to do is you want to have a massive explosion into your grand opening. Once you have your grand opening, don't worry, you're going to meet every week from then until the time Jesus comes back. Okay? So,
that's right.
And here's another principle. Nobody in your church ever wants anything as much as they say they do. By that is this. After we launched, see, we didn't have a youth group. We didn't have a youth ministry for about 1.5 years. We did not have small groups for 9 months until after we launched. Here's the thing. Everybody's bothering me. Don't we need a youth group? My children are dying on the vine without your youth ministry. When we started our youth ministry, every one of those people that badgered me about having a youth ministry didn't show up. You launch when you're ready to launch and not when everybody else tells you that they're ready for you to launch. Did you have a question?
Yeah. How long did you meet with your launch team before you started your previous service?
We met with them for about 3 months.
3 months. And that typically for us is 3 to 5 months. And that's the thing the previews does. It gives you more time. It used to be, we'd say, try and start within 3 to 6 months. Now you can start within 3 months if you're going to do 4 or 5 preview services. Now you've spread it out, you know, to 6 or 7 months doing something like that. The guy who started the preview services, it's a church called Bayside Church in Granite Bay in Northern California. Dave Olson and Ray Johnston is the pastor, and they did 6. It was an experiment. They thought, we'll try this thing. They didn't even think it would work. And they did one after another, and they ended up doing 6 monthly, then went to the weekly and popped with a few hundred people when they first started it. So that's how the W works. The larging, it takes work. It's not easy. It takes a lot of long hours at the beginning, but it pays off in such a great way. Let's look at the timetable. There's different options. We've come up with strategies in this. I put this first one because this is what I did typically in the churches I started. We would Actually, that's what you did. Here's what I did, option two. This is what Mark's church at Vantage Point did. We strategically had them start in October.
Well, we started in September.
September.
But the fall.
So they did September, October, November, December, January, launched in February, followed up by Easter.
Right.
Mine, we would start early in the new year and have the grand opening on Easter. And then a huge one next to Easter is Mother's Day. So Mother's Day would be a big Sunday after that. And another one, again, depending where you're at, you probably wouldn't want to do this like in Phoenix or Palm Springs or where it's really hot. But July, August, September. Now, some places that would work with a grand opening in October. And then you have Christmas Eve coming up, which can be a great, great big Sunday
as well.
Part
of the reason why one and two are so attractive is because what you're trying to do with one and two is, how do I avoid as much of the summer as possible? I mean, that is the gist of one and two.
Summer's tough whenever you start,
summer,
but especially if you start at Easter. Here's what I want to do, Mark. Different ways of advertising. We're not going to go over all of this. If you want more on this, if you do send me the email, I have one I just did yesterday on outreach and marketing. Just say that you want the outreach and marketing notes on, and I'll give you
one
this.
One more quick thing about
but I do want to show you
one.
There.
When we launch in February, the great thing about February is they say not only is that the biggest divorce month of the year where people are looking for something, not only is that typically the highest attended church month of the year for some reason as well, but also if you launch in February, then you have a double bump in Easter, and then you have another little further bump for Mother's Day. So you have gained so much momentum going into the summertime that when that dip comes, you're a little bit more prepared for it.
Very good. Here's some examples. One of the things we do, we use social media. Social media is just a great form of relationship building. We're not talking this more on launching large, but it's a means toward launching large. Another thing we do, many of our churches, our Hispanic church didn't do it, but most of our churches do it, and that's direct mail. Now this one, I want to show you a few of these, and then I want to have some time for question and answer. But on this, what's beautiful about this, this is in Monterey, California. It's the central coast of California. If you live there, you would know this. I didn't know this, but he pointed this out. Howard Hugo started Shoreline Community. This is Lover's Point. Everybody knows that. You wouldn't know that just looking at it if you didn't live there, but you do. So it becomes significant when he's doing a series on love and relationships. It's unique to the area. So I'm not a fan of this, okay? We're eager to meet you. The dog knocking down the guy, you know? Or this, a new church for a new day. Whoopee, you know? Like the unchurched is really going to care that a new church is coming in.
What he's saying, too, is don't send out a church brochure. Don't send out something that's just like, hey, look at us, we're an awesome church, because you're probably going to attract church people. What you want to send out is something that the unchurched person is going to look at and just kind of go, I need help with that. Yeah, I might visit that.
It's called What's In It For Me. that's what it's called, W-I-I-M. What's In It For Me is what they're thinking. Now, here's a guy who just started a couple months ago, had a wonderful launch from this.
I like that.
Neat design, restoration, better than new, the sermons listed, and the dates of the sermons. Because maybe they can't come to that first one, or maybe revitalizing the workplace grabs their fancy, so that's the one they want to come to. Grand opening, everything back to the website. So many churches do this kind of, ain't we something, we got this, we got that. You don't. You're a brand new church. You don't have much, but you can have a great, great publicity. Now, you just saw that. This is what he was going to send out. Join us on the road to life. Would you want to go to that, Mark? Join us on the road to life versus what he did, because he didn't understand. Most pastors haven't had training in marketing, direct mail. So get somebody who knows that and can kind of coach you in it, get a good graphic designer as part of it. Get a professional. This is one we did. It was unique to the area in Sacramento and Auburn because they have the American River. People come from around the world to ride rapids, so we did this Freedom Over Fear, and we had the American River on there. This was Mark's first one, Mythbusters, and you know they've grown a lot, but that was very effective. This is when they had Bethany Hamilton. I don't like this one. Church doesn't have to be uncomfortable. People spend money to send that to thousands of homes. Some of the companies that are out there that do the cookie cutter, you know, one size fits all, I would never use that. Look at this one, Mark. You haven't seen this one. I don't want a mistletoe, but it sounds painful. I don't know what a mistletoe is, but it sounds painful. Grandma got run over by a what? I looked at that. This guy asked me to help him, and he told me the direct mail did not work in Long Beach, California. I said, how do you know? He said, we sent it out. I said, what'd you send out? And this is what he gave me. I said, no wonder it didn't work. And we developed this wonderful direct mail with the designer and a series he did on the family. And he was a church of like 27, had never been over 50, and they'd have over 100 people on that particular
big day. The
greatest
thing about good marketing is that good marketing is smoke and mirrors. And what I mean by that is you are a small church because maybe you have a core group of 20 people. You have no idea who's coming to that first preview. Birds of a feather flock together. People like crowds. The good thing about like a good mailing piece or a good design is that no one in the world knows how big or how small you are. All they know is this. That looks nice. I might want to come to that. Yeah. But if you make it look crappy, then people are going to go, oh, that must be a small church. Nobody's going to be in the parking lot when I first drive in. So
use integrity. If you get, it used to be 1%. That was phenomenal. If you got a 0.05%, that's extremely good. If you get 0.025, you're actually doing well. Like when you're talking, when you're sending out thousands of pieces, we never did them that big. We first church we did 18,000. I think the second church we got up to like 35,000.
That's a great question, but there's so many different factors.
There's a different.
In play.
There really are.
Not only the quality of your mailer, but the mailer, but the saturation of the area, how ripe the area is for your church to even.
How many other people are doing mailers?
How many are already mailing to begin with? I mean, our first mailer, we sent out 15,000 homes. That was it, and we. We went from, now we had a servant evangelism campaign too for 4 weeks, but a combination of that and the direct mail piece to 15,000 homes is what got us from a core group of 25 to 225 for our first preview. So we had to have a major marketing thrust
for this.
It cost us for 15,000 mail pieces, it's a long time ago, but I would probably say like maybe $2,500.
Yeah. And you, it's usually more, it would be more now. You figure about $5,000 for maybe 15,000 up to 20,000. Get somebody to help you with this, though. You don't want to do this.
It's complicated. Getting it through the mailhouse and getting the
free iPods
postage.
If you come. And on the back, there was really little print. They were giving away one free iPod in the service. That was it. But you saw it. It looked like free iPods. You don't want to get into that. But here's
don't give away a first generation. iPod.
Yeah, don't do that one. eBay. Here's a cool thing. Here's one that Mark did. It's not early on, fairly early on, but it's just a nice piece. It was on marriage and relationships, called Happily Ever After. And you look at that, and on the back, see the white space, lots of white space, and then the series on it. And you know they're unchurched people, Mark. We would actually see people kind of like bring these with them to church, and they'd be holding on to them. Sometimes they'd call up on the phone and say, how much is the seminar? We'd say, it's free. It's free, really. Well, we take an offering, but it's a free will offering. You can give. You don't have to give, kind of thing. And they come, and this is like their ticket in. And it's so precious when you see people come, totally unchurched, who get that. We need to stop. If you have a question, real quick, if you have one in the back, and then we're going to be up here afterwards. We'll do here and then over here. Yes?
You say, you guys want the email should send you what, the marketing?
If you send me an email, it's coachdavepage@gmail.com. Just put Launching Large in the title. That way I'll know that you were in the Launching Large workshop. And I'll send you the PowerPoint. I'll send you also the paper I did on church launch, stay small, launch small. Yes?
For all of your previews on a Sunday.
Can you guys
just... very good point. All of our previews were on a Sunday. And not only on a Sunday, all of our previews were on a Sunday morning. And the reason is because the most likely time unchurched people are going to come is Sunday morning. It's cultural. So you can say, well, I can get the church at 2 o'clock, you know, Sunday afternoon. They'll rent it to me for cheap or free. we say don't go near there. Stay away from that. Saturday night. The only people who do Saturday night are mega churches, and they beg people to come overflowing. So we encourage, if at all possible, start on Sunday morning. And it's hard to get a place on Sunday morning, but we found it's been the most effective at reaching church people. Yeah.
Is it smart to do it at the same place at the same exact time that you're going to have your launch?
Absolutely. You don't want to have previews in one location and then launch, a couple months later in somewhere else, especially... you're building this great website, you're doing direct mail, you're doing little invite cards to people, and then you change it up, and they can't find you. So you want to stay there as long as possible.
It makes
two in
for
the back,
a great
and then
rave,
we,
but
then
a
we
horrible
need to
church.
Stop. Yeah.
It sounds like you guys are saying that a combination of marketing and sort of evangelism for the previews, what's the difference in that process that you have to launch? Is the preview on steroids?
No real difference. You're continuing to do the same thing. A lot of prayer, a lot of inviting people. We do this thing called Operation Andrew, where they're inviting their friends, they're giving us names, we're praying for their friends. So there's a lot of synergism going into it. Bathed in prayer, serving people in the community, outreach, and technology as well. Last, you got the last question.
Well, you did say not to change locations during preview services. However, like on grand opening launch day, can you switch the location at that point?
If you had to, I wouldn't do that. I mean, we had a great junior college, community college, but they would only let us meet there 6 months, which meant we could have done previews there, but not the launch, or just the launch and then moved out right after the launch. And we decided not to do that because of that very reason. Now, we did do previews, launch, and then a year later outgrew a school, and just a year after starting the church, moved into another school. And that worked fine, and we advertised that. But I wouldn't do that because it's just really confusing to people. So, hey, thanks for attending our workshop. We'll be up here, you guys, if you have any questions.
Coach David, you know what?